Hey, I want to invite you guys, if you've been listening to this podcast and enjoying this content and are passionate about protection, you should know that we have an entire library of all of the Protector Symposiums that we've ever done, hosted at ProtectorNation.com. You can go there and you can download those and you can watch every Protector Symposium we've had to date there online, and you can learn protection tactics from some of the most elite trainers in the world from the comfort of your own home. I think you'll be surprised about how much content we actually have there. It's very, very, very reasonably priced, and you can upgrade your protection skills. Remember, protection's not all about the hard skills. 90% of it is all about the software, the programming, the way you see and move in the world to achieve a safer pattern of life. With that having been said, go to ProtectorNation.com, join us there, learn from the best of the best. Now, enjoy the show. Boom, boom, what's going on, you guys? Here we are, Civilian Protector Project. I'm here with Maury Abreu of Omega Protective Concepts. This is going to be awesome, man. Maury is like a kindred spirit, like a brother that I didn't know I had. It's like, you know, like reality's happening, and there's in the combative world, even in the sports world. I heard, I think it was Tim Tebow talk about it even earlier today. He's like, there's a guy out on the battlefield, and there's a guy out there that's practicing his training. And when I meet him on the field, he's going to defeat me because he's working harder than me. While I'm sleeping, he's working. And I had this same concept going on when I was in Iraq. I was like, there's a dude out there. I'm like, I'm going to face this cat at some point. And like, whoever puts in the most work is going to be victorious, right? But Maury's like the good guy version of that. You know what I'm saying? I feel like if when you listen to our lives and our relationship, there's this in sync. There's a very similar like lineage and like childhood and business and a value system and level of competence and all these different things that I just, there's few people, I don't know if I've ever even said this on a podcast, few people that I spend time with that actually charge me up or raise my frequency or have the ability to nourish me, right? And so generally, if I'm around someone, I'm a source for them, which I love, which also nourishes me in its own way. But there's few people that I meet where it's like eagles meeting at altitude. You know, it's like you've gone through what you've gone through, you've trained, you have you what you bring to the table, and it's like you meet someone at a certain level and it's like, yo, bro, like, what are you doing up here, bro? You know what I had to do to get up here? And you're like,
change the planet.
Yeah, you're like, yeah, man, because I had to do all the same stuff to get up here. You know, and we can talk about things that are at that level that we're at, and it's really, really beautiful. So I'm so excited to expose you guys to this awesome man here. People say brother from another mother, but this is that type of thing. And we're going to talk a lot about some tactics that you guys may or may not have been exposed to. What he does is very unique, but also extremely relevant for anyone who wants to be a protector in a number of different situations. This module here with Maury is going to be unlike anything else you guys are going to see. And if you guys want to go deeper with him, obviously, you know, we're going to make that a possibility. He's always doing awesome things in the training space and in other spaces, which you'll learn about as well. But the purpose of this video here is to kind of give you an overview of the menu that we're going to hit. We're going to talk a little bit about his background. You're going to get an overview of the menu that we're going to give you guys inside the Civilian Protector Project, and I'm totally stoked. So with no further ado, yo, brother, boom. It's an honor. It begins, my man. It begins. Boom. You know, so, man, why don't you tell them a little bit about your background, then we'll get into a little bit about the company, and then we'll kind of go through the menu that we have for these guys that we're going to be recording in the next 48 hours while we're up in here tearing this thing to pieces.
Sure. So I'm out here at Byron's Fortress, and we're going to spend a few days together, and what we discussed doing was bringing, you know, my legitimate training and operational journey, and all I've done is taken that and leveraged it into this training opportunity through currently my company, Omega Protective Concepts. Former Marine, had a pretty colorful childhood, which I draw some of my experiences from. Saw some few things, was raised in a rather abusive environment and physically, psychologically, and otherwise. And, you know, I say that with no bitterness or no, it's nothing to be proud of or anything to be ashamed of. It's just an experience. And just actually using that as a gift and putting pain to purpose and using that to then equip others for success against this very real thing that none of us are going to escape, which is hard times that are defined by very violent actions and very violent people. I just saw a few minutes ago there was a
shooting at a church, man. Here we go.
And so that was a little bit of my upbringing. Went in. I always wanted to serve since I was a boy, actually. I'm a first generation American, and I felt very compelled to serve, and I was always inspired by service and military service and the warrior culture.
You know, real quick on that, you know what I'm saying? I interject myself every once in a while. It's such a masculine thing, you know? I feel like a lot of dudes out there are struggling sometimes to figure out, like, one of the equations that men are faced with, which is what to do with power, you know? The equation of, like, okay, I'm becoming more strong. How do I validate myself in this space, in my life, and da-da-da-da? What is this strength for? And I just want to encourage you guys to go ahead and investigate and realize the truth about power and service, and it's that we are strong to be of service. And so, you know, you get a little boy running around the kitchen with his mom, he wants to help and all these different things, and you're strong to be able to serve on a level that a lot of people are not able to serve. And I sit before you, and Maury sits here before you, built in certain ways and with certain levels of competence that give us confidence, that really allow us to serve people and be ready to serve people in ways that other men cannot. And that's special and that's honorable. And so that drive that you have inside of you, the will to power, make sure you subject it to some honorable service. And that, my friends, is the way. Sorry.
No, it's good. It's good. And, you know, I just always had this desire to serve, and I always wanted to be in the military. I was always inspired by military folks and the culture of courage and willfully engaging, where as a child I didn't have a vote, just willfully going forward and engaging in a violent environment and going there, you know, by design and on purpose. That just was always really called to me.
Yeah, same here.
And then after the Marine Corps, I actually worked in the prison system for a while, and I really hated that job before I got it. And I said to myself, I'd never work in a prison ever for a number of reasons.
You hated that job before you got it.
Yeah, I did. I did. And I had applied to several law enforcement jobs, and I did well on the state test. But while I was waiting, I needed a JOB that paid bills, because things were, you know, the Marine Corps really takes care of you in a sense, you know, with things financially and where you're sleeping and where you're staying and fed.
One of my buddies, one of my best buddies said that Maslow's hierarchy of needs, you know, like your food, your water, your shelter, your belonging, your honor, all these social things. Like, you actually, when you leave, you kind of have all that, all the way up to self-actualization. If you have a little rank, little social equity and things like that, when you get out, that hierarchy of needs, that pyramid gets flipped on its head.
It does.
And so that's part of the struggle. Check out Finding Meaning After the Military. That's my book. It's in there.
Go ahead and
get some. But yeah, it's interesting you say that.
Yeah. So, frankly, I had a number of relatives that were also incarcerated, and that's why you hated it before. That idea, you know, my father really, what he did was, which was brilliant, he would point to these examples of those that went left, let's say, in my family. I mean, really hard, violent, like, bank robberies and, like, attempted murders of police officers. Like, really hard.
Like, the real things.
Like, the things that count, right?
Not just, like, bar fighting and stuff.
Yeah,
like,
no, not bar fighting.
Some decisions were made.
Yeah, just a history of violence in the family. And he would point to them and say, you have a decision to make. You can be that bloodline, or you could be this one.
Because that's in you.
Yeah, because that's part of the heritage. So I said, no, I don't think I want to do that. So I didn't want to work in the prison, but it ended up being an amazing, amazing gift. And anyone that's been a correctional officer, whether they moved on to something else or they still are, they understand that there are opportunities working in a prison system where you can learn a language that cannot be taught in a book or a PowerPoint or through some academic medium. You can only experience different men, that have walked different paths in life, some that have actually are now walking in redemption from whatever got them in prison in the first place, and some that aren't, and just being around an environment where there's, where everything is manipulation.
Yeah. That's just nuts, man. I remember hearing another guy talk about the prison system, and he was just like, yeah, like, every minute of every day, someone's angling on you. Like, they're looking for angles. There's always, like, every conversation, they're angling on you. He's like, and that, in fact, it was Varg Freeborn and Violence of Mind. Amazing book. And he was, I gotta have Varg out here, bro. And he was talking about that. He was like, that probably the worst thing was, it's almost like our PTSD from combat, where you're like, there's always somebody aiming at me. That I can get shot at any moment. I can get blown up at any moment. But this is like a different form. Probably, I would imagine, honestly, a little bit worse, because at least there were safe places I could go to. The people next to me I could at least trust, you know? And like, there's that timer, I'm up, he sees me, I'm down, going in the back of your head every time you're outside of base.
Yeah.
I gotta move, I'm up, he sees me, I'm down. That's how long it takes for you guys, that's how long it takes for a sniper to really aim in on you, glass you up, and take crack off a shot. So in the back of your head, you're constantly kind of, okay, I need to move, it's been about 3 seconds, I need to move, maybe I'll take a knee, maybe I'll stand up. But I can only imagine an environment where every social engagement you have, like, you're literally like,
And for me, you know, I walked out of the Marine Corps and into the prison system. I didn't really have a transition.
Yeah.
So, you know, it was fascinating. And then while I was waiting to get into this, I was looking at a state and some local municipalities.
Mm-hmm.
An opportunity came up for the agency that I currently work for.
Mm-hmm.
And based on a number of things, my top secret clearance and frankly, a agreement that I have with my employer that I will not use my position and reveal it either for personal or professional gain, because I have a private business that they have, I won't say authorized, they think they authorized me to teach, but you know, a business that I run, and I've informed them this is what I'm going to do as long as I don't violate the code of ethics or anything like this. So that's what I've been doing, conducting counterterrorism operations around the globe, armed, following and protecting people. In a protective posture, low profile, low vis, meaning that we are there and they don't know that we're there. The idea is for no one to ever know that we're there and come back home safe.
Mm-hmm.
And then I was approached back in near 2010. I had entered the law enforcement training circuit really deep. You know, this is well before social media was really prominent like it is today.
Mm-hmm.
And if people could just set all the hate that exists outside, aside for a moment within the industry, we're so blessed to live in a time where there's all this free information on training. And you get to pick, you know, which you want,
what you
want
to put
on, at least through a digital means. And then you can go and go hands on and, you know, pay and actually go to a class and train with all these amazing instructors that are out there.
And on that real quick, that was one of the biggest things that I learned when I got out of the Marine Corps. It was like, oh, I just did the deed. Like, I've been to war twice now. Got the t-shirt, and then I got out and thought I was like a made man, like most military dudes do. And the civilians don't help because they don't know any better. So they're like, oh, you're military, you know everything, and you've been to war, you know everything. But then it wasn't until I started really training and going to shooting competitions and getting around the civilian training circuit that I realized, like, you know, I remember at my first shoot house with LA Sheriff SEB, and the guys are like, I'm going to a shoot house. And my big brother at the time, man, he's like, where are you running to? You know, because they in the Marine Corps, they teach us like shots.
Fire some action.
Yeah, but kicking the door, raw, like, you know, we're going crushing through shock troop tactics, flying through, shooting everything, screaming. And he's like, where are you running to? And I'm like, I got to get in the house. I got to get to the threat. I got to overwhelm them. And he's like, how long do you have to clear this house? And I'm like, I don't know. I got to address the threat. And he's like, the rest of your life. You have the rest of your life to clear this house. You make one mistake and it's over. And I was like, he's like, slow down. And then I thought of all the training I got in the military. And then I realized that what he was saying was the truth, and that these guys clear like 800 calls a year, you know? And I'm just like, the training you got in the military, moral of the story, the training you got in the military isn't necessarily, especially if it's, you know, basic infantry type stuff, you need to keep training. You need to keep training.
Well, you know, one of the principles that we cover that really addresses this is terrain dictates tactics.
Yeah. So situation dictates tactics 100%. Too. Yeah.
So definitely that would be an application of that.
Yeah.
So that's what I do professionally, with the government. And then I have my business once I got into the professional law enforcement training circuit, and I would end up taking different courses. And by the end of the course, I would be recruited by the instructor to
help out,
co-teach and assist. Yeah. And I was so just full of energy and passion and wanting to serve my community that I was really oblivious to the talent that I did have, because I always had, even though I was talented, I always had a student attitude. Nice. I always had a student first attitude. I still don't have a I've arrived kind of attitude. Yeah. I do walk with an exceptionally high level of certainty and confidence, but that doesn't come from a place of ego and pride, right, and me thinking that I'm better than anyone else. It just comes from just knowing I know what I know.
Yeah.
And so I started teaching more, and ultimately I got asked to come in and teach some niche things within the firearms realm, within extreme close quarter applications that the law enforcement agencies were not getting at all. Wow. And I brought that skill set in, and then for years, I had no social media, I didn't have a website, I didn't have an email account, I had nothing. All of my business was word of mouth, and I couldn't keep up with the classes.
Yeah.
So it was a real blessing, and then I formalized it, launched Omega Protective Concepts.
Omega.
We equip and train people for success against every form of violence and every environment in which it may occur, every form of attack.
Let's go.
And we teach civilian protectors, law enforcement, military, Fortune 500 companies, asset protection folks, executive protection. We are doing it all, and we're going bigger and better and just aligning ourselves with people at this level to just really share the gift.
Yeah. I'm so excited for what we're going to go through. We got a shoot house locked on tomorrow. We got a Savage crew locked on. We got the cameras coming in. This is going to be amazing, man. It's going to be amazing, the information you guys are going to have access to. You're getting access to the top shelf stuff, the black label stuff. And a lot. You're not going to even know what people don't recognize the quality of what they're getting in this project, man. So I'm super stoked. And, it's amazing how our backgrounds prepare us to be able to serve, and the things we go through that we don't even know if they're going to be good or bad, or maybe they hurt, but they just perfect us, like sharpening a blade, like hammering that steel, so that when the time comes, there's some integrity there. There's some integration there that can withstand the challenges and or the opportunities, the requirements that God places on our shoulders, So it's such an honor to be here with you.
Amen.
After walking that path.
Amen.
So let's see here, dude. Let's get into the, did you have any more you wanted to say on that? Where you come from, what your company does?
No, I think that's pretty much it. Married, blessed. We have six children.
Six children, man. Let's go.
Six children, five girls.
Be fruitful and multiply.
Two girl dogs.
Yeah, let's go.
A lot of estrogen in my house, one boy.
Yeah.
So, if you pray for me.
Yeah, man. No, I love it, man. That's good stuff. Got the tribe, man. Be fruitful, multiply. He's doing it. You know what I'm saying? Empty hand skills. What would you say is the premise and really the concept, the idea behind what you want to bring to the table when it comes to empty hand skills?
Yeah, so some of the things we'll be delivering, we're capturing it tomorrow. We're going to put it behind a digital wall, and you'll get access to it.
Yeah.
Is how do we take what we have and maximize it, right? How do we become efficient? And in the module on empty hands, what we're looking at is, regardless of, look, it's probably negligible, right? And we're not teaching people close hand striking, because there's some consequences that come with close hand striking. But so without taking a deep dive on that, let's just use close hand striking, because everybody understands a fist. Mm. It's probably negligible if your fist is this way or this way or a variant of that at the point of impact. It's probably negligible. But what's not negligible is understanding how to position your hands in a way that does a number of things. That is, that it allows you to protect yourself and rapidly respond. Mm. And we apply principles of power generation, and the principles are not married to a technique. For example, just as an example.
So you can take these principles and you can add them to techniques you may already be familiar with.
I'm going to give you a perfect template of how that applies of what you just said.
Let's go.
So whether it's a punch or a palm heel strike or an elbow or any variant of a hand or arm striking, how do we generate power? So we'll take principles such as being relaxed. What does that even mean? Mm-hmm. So as instructors, we tend to be really guilty sometimes of using terms or repeating phrases expecting that the end user even has a clue as to what that means.
Can really comprehend or track, especially if they're not from the culture.
100%.
Yeah.
100%. So what we'll get into is defining what total relaxation is and how being relaxed and having a relaxed muscle actually gives you a faster muscle so you can respond more dynamically versus having a tight or tense muscle, which is slower and does not allow for you to maximize your power. Right. Things like hip and shoulder rotation, using your entire body or full body weight striking. And then things like rapid retraction, which means when you do throw that strike and it's at full extension, you don't just let it hover out there, you bring it back dynamically and quickly. And so we will address things within empty hand striking using principles that you'll be able to understand regardless of your prowess in this realm. Yeah. And say, wow, I don't understand the technique 100%, but I got that principle. That principle makes sense. And now I can take that one principle and apply it to a multitude of different settings. And then I can be clearer and I can be faster and I can respond in a way that has more clarity and has more certainty.
More effectiveness. And this is something I struggle with in shooting quite a bit because when I'm shooting, you know, whether it's a competition or it's just a drill on the range or whatever it is, I'm in a combat mindset, right? So like everyone else is at a shooting competition, I'm in a firefight. Every single time that buzzer goes off, I'm back. Like, I'm in my other home. And so I have a tendency, and I've had a tendency, and I've worked out of it quite a bit, but I still have this tendency to where I want to be stiff. So you see some of my videos, I'm just like, bah, like I'm bearing down on that weapon. It doesn't recoil because I'm putting so much pressure into it. I'm pulling the trigger and I'm like burying my shoulders, you know, because I feel safer in here like this. And all my shooting instructors are like, bro, you're slowing yourself down. Like you need to relax. You need to relax. Even your hands need to relax. You'll be able to shoot way faster. Like, so it's something I had to start working in, like, all right, cool. Like, and honestly learning to ground myself and get into that almost flow state before the combat begins is something that I started to work on, how to get my biology to that state before it starts. And it's helped me tremendously.
Yeah. 100%. Yeah. Staying relaxed will make you faster.
Yep.
Staying relaxed will give you more power. Sure.
Yeah.
Yeah. Staying relaxed will make you more powerful. So at the point of impact, you know, if you weigh, let's say you're a 150-pound male, let's just say, right?
Yeah.
Maybe that would be considered a little bit closer to the diminutive side versus a 200-plus pound person. Yeah. Well, here's what's relevant. Here's the power of understanding how to generate power. Mm. Is no one, that's a 50-pound difference, by the way, between 150 and 200, right?
Right.
But let's use 50 pounds. Forget that the person is 150 pounds or 200. Let's use the number 50. It's very powerful, so I want you to get this. Mm-hmm. None of us, in our right mind, would barefoot put our foot out on the floor and allow someone to take a 50-pound plate or dumbbell or kettlebell and drop it on our foot from a distance of about shoulder height. Why wouldn't we do that? Because we know that piece of metal is unemotional about the law of gravity. It's going to go straight down at full speed. And when it lands, it's going to crush your foot. now think about this. That's just 50 pounds. Yeah. And we all weigh well past that, right? Mm-hmm. Whether you're a 99-pound woman or a 199-pound man. So if you understand this concept of how to generate power using principles, you now take, even if you only know a limited number of strikes, and you can multiply its
effectiveness
10x or whatever number.
Yeah.
So that's what we do with principles. We really communicate the principles, give them a few techniques under which those principles can be married, and you get empowered It's a value add that is right now. It's not unobtainium. I don't have to go to 30 sessions to start getting this. I can own this right now.
Yeah, and those are the principles that work, because those things that you got to go through 30 sessions to get to, like, man, it's really hard to if you haven't fully integrated those things, it's hard to execute them in a kinetic environment.
100%. You know what I'm
saying? The more sophisticated it is, the higher chance it has to break. And that's how I like to teach as well. Like, all my EP stuff is all principle based, because the situation is what dictates the tactic. But if a man of principle, those principles fit multiple the spectrum of situations. And so I love that, man. Yeah. That's smart.
Yeah,
that's
man.
Smart. That's good stuff. So that's going to be savage. I can't wait to get into that stuff. And it sounds simple, but when you guys get to the modules, you'll understand that most wisdom is simple.
That's right.
You know what I'm saying? But it ain't necessarily easy.
That's right.
Simplicity is the ultimate sophistication. Let's go. Okay. Vehicle combatives.
Yeah. So vehicle combatives, I draw a lot of that from my experience with Kelly McCann back in Fredericksburg, Virginia in 2012. Mm. He brought me and a few other folks down to... come down and shoot this video series on vehicle combatives, which was a fascinating. I had so much fun shooting this content, and now extrapolating some of that, passing it on to you, doing things like having an understanding of how to respond to attacks that happen in and around our vehicle, because vehicles are often a place of attack, right?
100%.
And so either the person is trying to maybe carjack you, or maybe push you into the vehicle so they can dominate you physically, sexually, what have you, get you in there to, you know, get your identification, get your credit cards, things of this nature. They can control you, get out of this open lot and have this confined space. See, bad people and evil people are very comfortable and confident and competent at using confined spaces to their advantage.
Right.
In general, in general, the moderately trained person, and if we back off from that, the person that's not trained at all is very uncomfortable in a confined, tight space.
Yeah.
So what we're going to do is we're going to address making you comfortable in these confined spaces. How do you manipulate your body? How do you manipulate the environment physically so that you can manipulate your attacker psychologically through applying a physical action? Mm-hmm. How do you position yourself if you're in the driver's seat and just before you close the door and while your doors are unlocked, someone comes in through your passenger side and gets in the car? And all these wonderful things, wonderful terminologies that we use, such as situational awareness.
Situational awareness!
That you're going to be situationally aware 100% of the time. That is the goal, but there are distractions. You may get that tragic call on the phone from a loved one. You may be carrying individuals that share your DNA, and they're tiny, and they're driving you crazy and insane, and they're distracting you, and you're trying to get them in the car. There are things that can distract you from being 100% situationally aware, especially if you haven't equipped those offspring or your spouse to be assets and help you dominate the environment,
the
not through paranoia, but through being prepared, not through 100%. Being alarmed, but being alert and aware. And so we'll address how you respond to things like that. How do you respond to one of the interesting techniques we show is you're going to get in your car, and just before you close that car door, someone comes and stops that door and jams it open, and now you have a gun in your face. And you're sitting down, and the person's right here, the door's here, and the gun is in your face. Like, how do you deal with that, right? And is there a solution to that? And what happens is so many times, Byron, is in the hand-to-hand world, in the close combat, close contact, self-defense, combatives, whatever the word is that we would use to describe it.
Yeah, this week.
So many scenarios or so many drills don't have an end.
Right.
They have a training timeout, or or someone blows a whistle, but what's the finish? Mm. Because if I have a firearm or an edge weapon or a deadly tool, and there's one of them, and we're fighting over this one deadly tool.
Yeah.
Until one of us is semi-conscious or unconscious, that there is no finish.
Yeah.
It perpetuates. It's protracted. It's time. So what's the finish? And then how do we accomplish that? And how do we generate massive amounts of power in this confined space? I'm now in my car and you're asking me to generate massive amounts of power where my range of motion is maybe this much distance from where my angle starts of my strike to the point of impact. So those are the things we cover in in the vehicle combatives portion. Yeah. And it's very, it's super exciting to teach. Yeah. It's super real because it's you and me and someone's in a suit and you're getting tossed around. I'll teach you how to use your environment, meaning the car, as a force multiplier, and how you're going to attach to them and bounce their body off of different parts of the car to cause pain.
Yeah.
We address things via an effective pain pathway.
Mm-hmm.
So essentially, every time we're touching someone, if you think of like those torch lighters, every time you touch a person, you're scorching chunks of skin off of them, meaning they're going to feel it every time you place your hands on them. Nothing is wasted.
Nothing is wasted.
Nothing is wasted.
You feel the energy. It just gets more intense as he talks. I love it, man. I love it.
It's the tea, man.
It's got to be the tea. But yo, I love this because if you go back, and I think we're getting up on like 200 tactical protection reviews at this point. So if I've published 200 or so tactical protection reviews, real world violence, where I've done like, hey, this is a real world situation. This is possibly what you could do to survive, move, da, da, da. You've got to imagine I've probably seen close to 1,000 of them. And I would tell you, I'd sit here and I would just, you can bet me if you don't believe me, but 80% of those happen in or around vehicles, transitional spaces. You're going from your pumping gas, late at night or just mid daylight. You're going from your house to your car. You're going from your car to your office to your car. So much, you're at the grocery store. Bro, I've had a lot of moms DM me. I had someone just yesterday tell me, hey, like they went through an attempted abduction at like Walmart in broad daylight. One of my other really close buddies, his wife, there was an attempted kidnapping on him and his beautiful wife and beautiful kids. Mom, obviously, fortunately, the mom is legit. She popped a curb. They pulled the van up behind her. She popped a curb and got out of there. But I say all this to say that understanding how to manipulate the environment in or around vehicles. We did a vehicle combatives course with Craig Douglas, which shout out to Craig Douglas, savage. If you get in a fight in a car, you now have superpowers if you've been through this course. Yeah. It's like they don't understand what's gonna happen and it sucks. And by the way, it doesn't matter if you know jiu-jitsu. The rules are completely different in a 360 degree. Like you can crush people if you know what you're doing. But we
literally
had a
crush.
Literally. But we had a female that, of course, in that class was attacked in a vehicle. And, you know, she spiked and had an acute PTSD event. And you know, hats off to Craig, because he, like, helped her come down from that, gave her the training, and it was very cathartic for her. And she ended up beating some EP guys that were there too, like wrecking their face because she knew what she was doing in that environment. And it was very healing for her. So I say all that to say that the probability that you're going to be attacked or targeted in or around a vehicle is extremely high.
Yeah.
Because I'd say about 80% of my videos are around vehicles, and that's what statistics also say. And transitional spaces are where it goes down. So that's going to be super relevant.
Yeah. And you said it happened in broad daylight. The reality is, you know, if not one of the number one currencies today is attention
100%.
Or attention deficit,
right?
The lack of attention. So people are not really so concerned with taking action in broad daylight because
no one's paying attention.
They are paying attention, just not to their environment.
Yeah,
right? So we'll address that. We'll address, you know, things like if you are carrying concealed and you're in your car and you have this seatbelt on, well, how do you even get to your weapon, right? So you have this lateral belt, you have this diagonal belt, you have the actual attachment point of the seatbelt.
Yeah.
You have, if you're carrying on your hip, you have your possibly the toe or heel of your magazine pushing forward, driving the gun even deeper into your holster, or if you're carrying appendix, just any number of things. And then when you do draw that thing, how do you manage that to where it's not bumping into the steering wheel? Just any number of things. You know, how do you manage engaging someone at the window without having conflict between what comes out of the gun and the flesh that may be interrupting it? So just all of these things, all of these precarious shooting positions. We're going to cover that.
That's going to be awesome.
And really just empower you, whether you're empty-handed or you're attacked by someone that's armed or you're armed yourself. Well, having a weapon on your person does not define or constitute you being armed. You being able to access that at the right time when you've purchased the real estate and the space and the distance to be able to do that competently and then put holes only where you intend for those holes to go, that is what defines and constitutes being armed. Otherwise, you're just in possession of a gun or a knife.
You're a warm holster, bruh.
Yeah.
You're carrying a firearm or a force multiplier for someone like us.
That's right.
Or someone who's more powerful than
that's
you.
That's right.
And someone who's probably more well acquainted with violence. So don't be that guy. Train. Extreme close quarters pistol. This gets me excited, you know, because pistol's my martial art. You know?
Yeah.
Gun fighting's my martial art. You know?
So what we're going to do there is we're going to do a lot of kind of redefining, dispelling some myths that are out there. I've never really, it's hard to for me to respect the instructor that says, hey, that technique is garbage, do this one. Mm-hmm. I think just let your technique kind of stand on its own, right? Eliminating yourself by knocking others down. Yeah. I'm not saying you don't do references, and sometimes you do got to call out. There is some real nonsense.
There's some malarkey. But I side with Mike Pannone and Craig Douglas on this one. If it can't be tested at speed against human pressure, and if it can't give you repeatable results at speed, and human pressure, then don't bet your life on it. So
that's
if
right.
someone's giving you some method that, you know, it's all sophisticated and you're using you're doing all these things, like test it at speed, get some airsoft pistols, get airsoft guns out, you and your boys. That was one of the things that I really, some of the instructors that have come through the Protector Nation is, okay, then when we went on force, the people who did what the instructor taught in the class were the ones that actually were able to win the engagements at a very high rate.
That's right.
So that's, you know, that's one of my litmus tests for things that I see that are being taught out there in the game.
Yeah, and again, what's, you know, pressure test, you know, one of the elements of defining the term pressure test is what's the finish?
Mm-hmm.
And this really plays a role with any hand-to-hand stuff. Like, okay, all those techniques are wonderful, but what is the finish?
Mm-hmm.
And does a pressure test simulate, because it's training, the person is most likely semi-conscious or unconscious.
Yeah, but they're combat ineffective.
Right. How have you effectively taken them out of the fight, right?
Mm.
So what we do in extreme close quarter pistol is, you know, I have quite a bit of experience on the curriculum development side of this with things that I came up with for several agencies. Pulling from other masters in this realm and just kind of processing it to the environment that I was working in.
Mm-hmm.
And that is marksmanship is different at an extreme close quarter range. And by extreme means you can touch them and they can touch you.
Yeah.
Number one. Number two, you understand that just because you put a hole in a human does not mean that the fight is over at all.
No.
In fact, it may make the fight much harder
much worse.
For you because there's consequence now that exists that didn't exist before for that person. So their fight is a real one.
May have elevated,
100%. Number three is how am I controlling this firearm? If I'm not using my traditional sights, what's the accountability of my rounds, whether I'm a civilian or law enforcement or protector of any kind?
Yeah.
I must account for the rounds. How do I do that under a high level of stress in a rapidly dynamically, violently evolving situation with a committed attacker, and then being able to understand when you can draw that weapon. When you do draw that weapon, what are your angles of fire? If you're down on the ground and you're doing extreme close quarter pistol, that's wonderful, but did the rounds go right past you and or through your opponent or attacker, excuse me, and maybe into the vehicle where your kids are?
Yeah.
That's not a win. So we look at this entire package of using a true marriage of hand-to-hand skills and firearm skills and not getting over enamored with either making it hand-to-hand or firearms, right? So what happens is you go to most academies, a academy that I taught at for almost an international counterterrorism academy for almost 5 years was guilty of this for some time and then we really got our act together. It's like, hey, you're the tactics person, you're the firearms person, you're the defensive tactics person, but those three were not speaking.
They weren't kicking it.
They were not kicking it. So it's like, how do we actually bring those worlds together, which is what we do in Extreme Close Quarter Pistol, we start off with some strikes. We teach you some strikes. We teach you some low-level strikes, meaning how can you create space between yourself and someone by using a strike that's non-injurious, that's a low-level strike legally, mm-hmm. right? And then higher levels of strikes, right? And then engaging from striking with flesh to dynamically and rapidly drawing that firearm, presenting it, indexing it in a way to where you can account for the rounds, and now you're striking them still just with bullets. Mm-hmm. That is not the same type of shooting as marksmanship shooting. Yeah, so yeah, in this realm, this is important, of extreme close quarter pistol, what we're looking for is combative marksmanship, defined as more holes in, mm-hmm. more blood out. You're mm-hmm. not necessarily looking for the perfect shot at the beginning stages of this engagement. Once those rounds start to take effect and there's some separation, then you can come to extension and continue, if it's legal, ethical, and moral, to continue a higher level of force to then engage where you're actually using the firearm in a more traditional sense. So we cover all that and just really empower you and get you to understand and demystify all these things.
Get them.
Within this realm.
I love what you're saying right now, man, because I have people coming to me and they're like, you know, I have a client right now who's got an MMA background and he's training with somebody who's supposedly, you know, who's you know, like SWAT or like military background, law enforcement background. And he's like, he's an MMA guy. So he's acquainted with violence and he's acquainted with combat. And so he's like, I don't know, man. He's like, I don't feel like this is effective for gun fighting. Like, if I'm in a gun fight, I don't need to be spending 3-4 seconds to try to aim to get the rounds on top of the rounds. Da, 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 da. And I just am like, bro, it's true. Fortunately, you have some understanding of violence because you've been in that sport world of it. I'm like, so you can actually tell. Most civilians aren't making the connection when they're learning to shoot a pistol that like marksmanship is a different thing than, like, it's part of gunfighting, it's part of a gunfight, but there's a whole nother way. Like I don't want to break the internet and make people angry, but the reality is, like, your homeboy with a pistol in 7-Eleven shooting at you from 10 feet and in, like, it doesn't actually take a whole lot of skill to shoot you, dog. Like, it really actually kind of doesn't. Like, yeah, accuracy is a part of it, but, like, he's going to point at you and he's going to shoot, and, like, some skills will help there. But, like, there's a lot more when it comes to gunfighting that I feel like a lot of instructors try to make it so complicated and sophisticated, maybe so that they have job security and so that they sound smarter than they are, when in all actuality, like, most gunfights, what is that, whatever the percentage is, a very high percentage, happen 15 feet and in.
Sure.
And the reality is, it doesn't take a lot of skill to shoot somebody at those distances. So what it sounds like you're talking about is, let's really understand gunfighting and what areas can we improve our competence levels to make us more effective at, you know, a close quarters gun battle. Yes. When in all actuality, if you're hand touch range, that guy doesn't need to go to the range for 10 years to be able to just shoot you, bro. You know?
Yes.
You know, so what advantages can we carve out in that type of a fight, which I think is awesome and needs to be addressed in the firearms industry because, you know, people try to make this more complicated than it is.
And we tend to, as instructors, sometimes overteach. You know, I really endeavor to apply this to myself. And when I'm certifying instructors to be instructors is kind of this idea of, our goal is to use as few words as possible to portray as much information as possible. That's tough. We're all the most humble instructor and the instructor with the least expensive vernacular is going to struggle with that. It's really tough because we're passionate. We want to give information, but sometimes we overinform, and we'll look to not do that tomorrow.
I love it.
Yeah.
That's good stuff, man.
And the last one was fighting fitness.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. Were we going to do that? Was there a home one on there?
Home invasion response.
This is interesting. I don't know if we're going to have time to get to this one.
So much information.
You know?
So, you want me to get into that a little bit?
Just touch on whether we find it in this module or not. I think it's good that they know that you offer it.
And yeah. Well, there'll be more modules.
Yeah.
We're not done.
We're still just warming up.
Yeah.
It's a celebration.
So, home invasion response essentially is not a, it's not going to be a room clearing class.
Okay.
So what I like to do, for example, part of what gave birth to the extreme close quarter pistol work that we were doing was, there's a lot of instructors that do phenomenal work. I mean, a lot that do phenomenal work at firearm skills and teaching firearm skills. Same thing with hand-to-hand skills. But what we're looking to do was fill the void of what is really super niche and super rare and peculiar. Mm. And that is that extreme close quarter pistol realm and doing it well in a way that makes sense.
Yeah.
So for home invasion response, we realized a number of things. You may be you're a CCW
owner,
carrier.
Yeah.
You have CCW, or you just have a weapon at home. There's different laws, different states, and we
are
training people actually throughout the entire nation and above. So whatever the case may be, we have a number of things that affect how we started looking at this home invasion response. And the name is very intentional. Our wording, we understand that the
words matter. Words matter, right?
They actually do. People tell you they don't,
they're wrong.
They realize how much it does. That's a different conversation. There's always going to be folks, even in the training room, sadly, that will never have eyes to see or ears to hear, but they are talented within a physical realm and a thing. You should listen to them in that and nothing else.
Yeah, at all.
At all, ever. Especially at night when you go out to dinner with them.
Yeah. God bless
them. So what we looked at with home invasion response is a number of things. During COVID and post-COVID, there was an explosive growth in the purchasing of firearms here in the United States.
Let's go.
And what you have now is a number of people, of which I don't have the percentages. I don't know how we would capture this data or the metric for it. Very high number of folks that said they wanted nothing to do with firearms. They would never own a firearm. They just didn't believe in firearms. COVID happened. They went.
They believed. They became believers.
So now that firearm is sitting at home somewhere, stored in some form or fashion,
collecting dust with the form still on it.
Yeah. So we have that.
Demographic
that we should address, right? Mm-hmm. We should help people be successful in responding to violence. So you have that.
And you might be one of them. And I'm so glad you're here because this is where we start changing all that.
That's right. And so this is where we pay it forward. So you have that demographic of people. Then you have the other demographic of people that went out and maybe got their concealed carry permit, maybe carry all, carry when they can.
Live the life, yeah, I'm saying.
Yeah.
People be like, Byron, what gun should I get?
All of them.
All the guns go bang.
Yeah.
What training should you get? That's what you need to be talking to me about right now.
That's
right. That's real.
That's right. So maybe they went, they qualified with it. They went through the state qualification. They did what they had to do. Maybe they even took a firearms class of some kind.
Which doesn't count, just so you know. The state qualification doesn't count.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So now it's 3 a.m. You're a legal gun owner. And the assault cue is broken, shattered window. Your alarm's going off.
Game on.
And there's a person or multiple trying to literally invade your home.
Usually multiple.
Yeah. So now we have that situation. Your heart rate is skyrocketing.
Hope you did your cardio. God bless you.
Yeah. You're in a condition, right? Your nervous system is in a condition that is really difficult for you to perform well and logically and be clear thinking if you don't have inoculation to this level of stress.
Even if you had inoculation to this level of stress, it's complicated. But if you don't, You're in an interesting situation at the moment.
Yeah, we're really asking a lot of an end user in a situation like this. And then, oh, by the way, many of us live in situations where there are other humans in the house, many of them which we brought into this earth, our seed.
Do we love more than any other human on the planet?
And they may be between the intruder and where you are.
Or maybe they're behind the intruder and where you are, where you need to send bullets.
That's right. So now we have to understand that that situation is entirely different because there's a mindset component that we have to address that has almost nothing to do with the mechanical action of pulling a trigger and lining up sights. Everything, all of these pillars are part of what holds up the temple.
Right.
But it's... What happens is people will take the pillar and they'll make it the temple. And they'll say, this is the only pillar. That's not the way that this thing works.
That's not the way that
this thing works. So what we'll do in home invasion response is address some of these things, address a little bit of things of angles of fire, address some precarious shooting positions, possibly join the gun and having to shoot while you're still on your bed, maybe laying, maybe on the side, maybe starting to get up with one hand, you know, one hand on the bed to kind of sit yourself up. You're half asleep or entirely asleep. So navigating all that to respond to a home invader is very different than going to the range at 1 o'clock in the afternoon, fully caffeinated, ready to go at a static target. And this is in no way a put down on shooting, you know, doing basic shooting.
Yeah. Master the basics. Get your fundamentals.
100%. Yeah. Master the basics.
Because it's all fundamental.
It's all fundamental.
It's all, yeah.
It's just that there's an ask of us under this extreme high level of stress for responding to a violent home invasion that's very different than that of...
What we do at the range.
What we do at the range. And that's what we really look to address in our home invasion response. And of course, we'll do some basic room clearing things, but it's really... It's not about that. And I say this, you can get some really good instruction on CQB. It's pretty common. Yeah. Before, it used to be like super niche and hard for you to get if you weren't on the job. But... Is it addressing, is that going to prepare you for home invasion? No, you just know how to clear a room.
Right.
But you haven't accounted for all the other aspects
factors
that contribute to how you're going to be mentally.
Well, what you're going to have to contend
that's
with.
That's right. That's right.
Yeah.
That's right. And if we rewind before with these all these well-intended trainings where you and I are fighting over a life and death tool.
Yeah.
Well, what is the finish? I just had a conversation messaging Kelly McCann on this recently. And just bouncing some stuff back and forth and asking him, hey, how do you see this? He's like, yeah, Maury, this is good and it works. Yeah, no problem. But where's the finish? What is the finish? Hmm. And we use the term pressure testing, but did you really pressure test? Hmm. What was the finish? Was it you blowing the whistle and saying, good job? So we need to look at those things, and that's what we do in home invasion response.
That sounds awesome, man.
Bringing kind of a fresh perspective.
Yeah.
That's relevant. Not just something new for the sake of selling snake oil, but relevant and a value add to the end user.
I love it, man. I love it. This is going to be good stuff.
Yeah.
Ultra relevant for civilians, ultra relevant for anyone who wants to understand that just more about the requirement and the inalienable right to be able to protect yourself. This is the stuff, man. And then finally, what was this? Fight fitness? Fighting fitness, man. I love it. I love it. I might let him haze me a little bit while he's here.
We'll see. What is fighting fitness? Fighting fitness is really simple. What fighting fitness is, we're going to take a traditional movement, the traditional exercise movement, and we're going to apply unconventional applications to that movement to maximize a result that has a direct correlation, a direct value add to fighting fitness. Fighting fitness is the fitness that we need to fight in an engagement where we have a committed attacker, where we're going hand to hand or stick to stick or knife to knife or gun to gun, anything that has a dynamic
physical
encounter, weapons involved or weapons not involved with an individual on the ground, multiple attackers in your vehicle, you know, in your home where there's an actual contact range altercation. Fighting fitness helps us prepare and prime our body to respond. So what is it that fighting fitness does, you know, compared to say regular fitness? Mm-hmm. What it does is it simulates or mimics moves that are used in fighting, used in combatives on the ground, on our backs, you know, when we're on top of someone, generating power in a short, compressed space, in a confined space, things of this nature, dynamically drawing a weapon, driving a weapon in past flesh, deep past bone, and into you know, the structure of the body or the organs of the body, not flicks, not, you know, I don't want to badmouth anybody, but some of the stuff that we're seeing out there, it's just, that knife ain't going anywhere. It's just,
it feels
really good and it looks great and it may be well intended, but it's not effective.
Yeah.
Yeah. So fighting fitness is.
So you're engaging.
Is engaging our body in a way that we use unconventional tools, which we're going to show them tomorrow when we film, and yeah. you guys will be able to see them. We'll tell you where you can get these as well. And these tools are great if you have a garage gym. They're great if you go to a traditional gym. You can use traditional standard weights on this. Mm-hmm. And if you're a traveling man, like yeah. we are,
yeah.
You know, running businesses and things like this, you can stow this in your vehicle. You mm-hmm. can attach a lot of these things to your vehicle at different locations and be able to bring your workout tools with you. And that's the idea, is for us to be able to stay fit while on the move.
Yeah. I mean, I was just on the road for like a month and a half, bro.
Yeah.
And, you know, I don't always work out when I'm on the road. Yeah. Like a lot of times it's like, okay, cool. Like I gotta move. But if I had a regimen like this, that might be what I could do while I'm 100%. On the road. Because you already know hotel weight rooms ain't like weight rooms. Yep. You know what I'm saying? Like, you know, but yeah. you can still haze yourself if you were down to get after it with yeah. like a this type of workout, prison workout, whatever yeah. it is, you know.
Yeah.
Heck yeah. That's exciting, man.
Be good.
Yeah, and also, you know, I mean, lift stronger than you foo is a martial art. Okay.
Yeah.
Training with that, been at a lot of dojos and a lot of mat rooms, and there's just stronger than you foo is a martial art. But when you're doing lifts that are so one dimensional, I'll say, and linear, and they give you strength in one direction, there's vulnerabilities to that. Okay, so there's vulnerabilities to that when you're in an actual fight and you're being called upon to recruit muscles that aren't actually as strong as the other muscles that you're constantly working and different things like that. There are vulnerabilities. And so I'm really excited about those types of workouts. I love me some kettlebells, and I love throwing the sandbags around, and I love my calisthenics and stuff like that, because it just integrates That's everything. Right. Yeah. And then that makes the other things even more powerful.
Yeah.
You know, and your range of motion and all this stuff. This is true fitness, really, yeah. if you ask me.
And we incorporate some of the basic tools. Mm-hmm. A lot of them are actually extremely inexpensive, easy to, I've traveled with them.
Yeah, you did.
That address prehab and or rehab.
Prehab, it's a serious word right there.
Yeah, just you know, getting our bodies primed to move and keeping our bodies mobile, because a lot of times, you know, if you look at things like protection work, law enforcement, security, mm-hmm. there's a lot of literally sitting around.
Which is very dangerous.
Or you may be standing around, and that is sedentary, and your spine starts to compress. There's a number of things that just don't do well for you to be able to then explode from that position and have to react. So doing these types of workouts help keep our body fluid, help keep us moving, help keep us mobile, keep our core engaged, help us with good dynamic, explosive use of our body, keeps our body strong, and it keeps our body loose. And it's absolutely crucial.
That's exciting, man.
Yeah, man.
That's exciting. I can't wait. Maybe we'll do that on the last day. We'll go to the gym together and just, or work out here on the on the balcony here and just get some.
My vote is this, so they can see how you can do it in as little, you know, on a mountainside.
Yeah, with as little support as possible.
Yep.
I love it, man. So, man, we're going to go over some awesome stuff. I'm super stoked. It's just super stoked to be here with you in the flesh, man, you know. And I can't say enough about what's coming, y'all. So, Civilian Protector Project, man, Mario Abreu, it's going to be awesome. And we're just warming up. We're just unwinding. So much more to come. And then if you like the digital stuff, make sure you follow Maury. Make sure you get in where you can fit in with his stuff, and or come train with us when he comes out to train at the Civilian Protector Project. It's just the beginning. We're just warming up. We're just unwinding. So much more to come. Heck yeah. Remember, guys. To those of us who take this seriously, who are really able to do the deed, protection's more than just a job. It really is a lifestyle. Boom. Boom. When it comes to the technology you use to protect your home, there's nothing better than Deep Sentinel. AI-driven, human-monitored technology that will keep you and your family safe for the same price you're paying for whatever Ring doorbell system you have. Check out Deep Sentinel. It's such an honor to join forces with these guys. They should be in every single house in the world.
Get real-time Overwatch for you and your loved one. And for 10% off, depending on when you're watching this, don't forget to use code Byron at checkout. Boom! Quick shout out to our sponsor, Staccato. My first pistol sponsor. I've been sponsored by a lot of companies, right, over the years. But when it comes to pistol, that's my bread and butter. Pistol's something I believe in. You know, I'm a competitive shooter. You know, we're shooting anywhere from, you know, 800 rounds a month type of thing, right? So Staccato, being what I believe, is one of, if not the most complete handguns you can put in your hand. It's got every component that a handgun could have, should have. They're actually extremely dependable now that they've made some changes, and these things are straight up tack drivers. If you're looking for a pistol that will do as much of the work for you as a piece of hardware can, obviously you have to have the marksmanship and all the different things, but different guns perform at different levels. And I want to say that Staccato is one of, by far, for sure, take it from a competitive shooter, we're shooting the highest volumes of rounds constantly right now, not used to have a background guy, but like right now, when you go shoot, you're gonna see certain brands. Staccato is one of, if not the highest performing firearm that is both CCW, duty ready, and also competitive ready. So I wanna give them a shout out. If you guys are looking for a good handgun to build your skills on top of, go check out Staccato. Much love and respect.
Yo, if you enjoyed that episode, and you like learning things like that, I want to encourage you to go to Protect Your Nation, build a profile, get in the Civilian Protector Project. This is where you can learn from these guys, live Zoom calls. You can see the full modules that you just watched, and you can become part of a community. It's the first social media platform for protectors where we can get to know each other. We can network, we can learn together. We do live Zoom calls with different SMEs every single month. There's so much packed in there. I'm in there. It's an honor, it's a privilege. Looking forward to working together to make the world a safer place by helping good people to become more willing, capable, and prepared. Protector Nation, Civilian Protector Project, let's go.